Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You have tuned in to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, 95.9 FM, and streaming at kgvm.org. Edward Abbey was born on January 29th, 1927. For your consideration, created by Ken Lane, February 6, 2026. Here is Mountain Mysteries and Edward Abbey's 99th birthday.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert, and this past week or two, many of us have been thinking about one thing out here in the rural American West, and that's the desert writer Edward Abbey, old Cactus Ed, who would have turned 99 years old on January 29. For so many of us, from park rangers to wildlife biologists to honky-tonk philosophers sliding off bar stools in Apache Junction, Arizona, or Mexican Hat, Utah, Ed Abbey was the writer who best put our love for the arid Southwest into words. Beautiful words, body words, poetic and surprisingly whimsical, a desert prophet with a cigar clamped between his teeth and a beer in his hand. Abbey was the author of the beloved Desert Solitaire, that rare book of poetic nonfiction formed into a perfect dramatic arc. Or arch, in this case, being the story of a seasonal ranger at remote Arches National Monument in the 1950s. It's got everything you want in a desert book. It's got ghost stories, mining lore, good-natured ribbing of the good rural Mormon people he worked with. A book equally devoted to the wildlife and geology, to mountain and desert, solitude and socializing. Winter snow and sizzling summer, cowboys and Indians, turkey buzzards and missing tourists. It's about a single long season in the slick rock country of southeastern Utah. The arches being the big orange and red and copper colored sandstone bridges in the sky that make the landscape into an ever-changing painting that our seasonal ranger walks through and around, communing with raven and snake and the unforgiving sun. Published to little acclaim and few sales in January of 1968, Desert Solitaire tells the story of an American wanderer from Appalachian, Pennsylvania, finding his place in the last wild parts of the American West. His writing was still formal enough to win approval from the East Coast elite. In the New York Times, Edwin Wade Teal described the book as a wild ride on a bucking bronco, and the author is a rebel, an eloquent loner. Instead of man against nature, it is a contemplative tale of man against the creeping menace of pointless, never-ending modern civilization. Nature, mostly indifferent to his struggle, at least leaves Ranger Abbey alone with his thoughts. Tourists were few and mostly on the weekends in those days when it took a long, daunting drive on an axle-busting road of sand and stone and occasional quicksand to reach the one campground and its makeshift ranger station, consisting of a little plywood and metal trailer and the picnic table outside where Ranger Abbey spent the evenings, in the company of a pinyon campfire. He watched the stars, filled his notebooks, and refilled his drink. After the campers went home, he spent Mondays collecting beer cans and Kleenex and other windblown trash, surveying his domain.
Desert Oracle Radio.
Two years he spent like this, April through September, 1956 and 57. With another season several years later, depending on the source. The least reliable source was always Ed Abbey himself, with good reason. As the people who document their daily lives and thoughts on social media prove to us every day, the line-by-line accounting of one's hours is mostly worthless, good only for logbooks and diaries. Like Henry David Thoreau before him, Abbey carved art from the mostly uneventful stuff of reality. Few of us who love the book will ever forget the plain-spoken wonder of its opening words. This is the most beautiful place on earth. Nearly three decades after his 1950s ranger work at Arches, and some 15 years after his little-noticed book had found slow but steady success as a mass-market paperback, Edward Abbey returned to the scene. Before a segment on a primetime news magazine show that never aired, because the show's host, Roger Mudd, had heard of Edward Abbey, had heard that Abbey was a radical eco-terrorist. Lucky for us and for posterity, the mysterious Ned Judge posted the video online around 2012. So we can hear a little bit of old Cactus Ed in his mature prime, a natural entertainer driving through Arches in his beat-up red convertible Cadillac through that Roadrunner and Coyote landscape.
When I first came to the Arches country back in 1956, this was the official entrance road. 8 miles of sand and dust and rocks. And when it rained, as it sometimes did, a lot of this turned into quicksand, real wheel-sucking muck. But I loved it. I loved it all. The miserable road, the dust, the wind, the flash floods and the quicksand, the hoodoo rocks and the voodoo arches, the ravens, the space, the silence. Of course, I was paid to love this place. I was a park ranger in those days. I worked out here. Right about here was the official entrance station. I used to sit over here on a folding chair and answer questions in case a tourist showed up. Sometimes one did. The questions were always the same. Where the devil are we? And how the devil do we get out of here? I did my best to be helpful. Government was paying me $3.50 an hour to guide people in and out of this place. Mainly out. I lived right over here in a little plywood house trailer. There were a few holes in the floor so the rats and snakes could get in and out. It's gone now. The government made this place a road maintenance supply depot, that gravel dump over there. This was a campground back in the 50s. Over here was a pit toilet. Government supplied the paper free of charge. There was no water available out here in those days. Everybody assumed if you were going to camp in the desert, though I could carry water with you. We're back in civilization again, thank God. Notice the ample parking space, reliable water supply back there, restrooms, comfort stations, everything you need. There is a $1 million well around here someplace, but it breaks down now and then. That's why they truck water in. Have to do it now. Tourists expect it. Why do people come to a strange place like this? Do they come for the solitude and the quiet? To be sad and lonely? For the modern facilities? Or for adventure? Or for something else? What are we doing here? I don't know myself for sure. There are some places so beautiful they can make a grown man break down and weep. I know, because this is part of my home. I belong here. Arches National Park has changed some in the 30 years since I worked here. Too many roads now. Too much asphalt. Too much traffic. Too many people. Too many of us everywhere now. That's the kind of world we live in. Crowded. Overcrowded. I'm not worried about it. Nature will take care of that problem in her own sweet way. Sooner or later, I'll tell you what I do wonder about. What will it be like out here when I am gone and you're gone and our grandchildren are gone and even our great glittering industrial civilization has crumbled to dust? When we're all forgotten, what'll be going on out here then? Nothing lasts forever. Nobody lives forever. Everything comes and goes. We all begin and rise and fade away. What then?
This is Desert Oracle Radio with soundscapes by our own Red, Blue, Black, Silver. We've had a fairly mild winter, which I like. It's a nice break from the real cold winters of the past couple of years. And we've even had a nice break from what seems like never-ending waves of rainstorms. Everybody's got weeds and mystery plants shooting up from our supposedly dry soils. Maybe it'll stay like this, maybe it'll get cold again and we'll have fresh snow in April. I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen in May. But either way, you cannot help but remember as the days began to get noticeably longer that the end point for this cycle of longer days and more sunlight, well, is summer. You know, that summertime. And in the high desert, it's often very nice right up until summer solstice, give or take a few days. That's when we shift into third gear of our seasonal wheel, and that's summertime. That's when the heat comes. I can't remember a cold July 4th. Not around here. I've had some cold July 4ths up at Tuolumne Meadows camping. Still snow on the trails or that slippery, clear ice that forms every night, freezing the afternoon snowmelt, and danger on the switchbacks. Watch out! So I'm already thinking about where will I go this summer to get out of the heat. Usually, most years, the answer is the Sierra Nevada. Where else? High elevation, cool green conifers, sparkling mountain streams and mirror surface alpine lakes. Then I remembered something important. I was talking to a guy I know. We met up at an old pub by Muir Beach, this kind of mysterious fella. Sort of everywhere all the time. Yeah, he was at Big Sur with Henry Miller and Hunter S. Thompson and Joan Baez, too. But he was in Paris when de Gaulle emerged triumphant over the Communist Revolution in France in 1968. As for which side, from what little I can put together, my friend was an advisor to both, as they say. He was a merchant marine, a wildland firefighter, and a forestry official up in Klamath. That's what I was reminded of, what he told me about Klamath. About the government work up there, tribal work, too. We were drinking Guinness Stout by the fire, waiting for the oysters, talking about nothing in particular. What have you been reading? How's old so-and-so? What's the AI trade for Q2? And then he says, look up Region 7. Region 7 of what? I ask him. Forest Service. A glance at my phone, idle at the end of the table, face down, silent as always, notifications off. Later, he says. Region 7 was dissolved. It doesn't exist anymore. Hasn't existed for most of a century now. Where were personnel from Region 7 reassigned? I give him the I don't know look, because I certainly did not know. He pulls a little notebook and pen from his vest pocket and scrawls all in caps, a good place to eat, tears off the page, tears it off the spiral binding, slides the paper across the table. I pick it up, fold it up, put it in my own coat pocket. A good place to eat. Yurok Research Area, he whispers. Experimental Forest Preserve, USDA. That's the Redwoods, I say. That's a Redwoods silviculture site, 1943, home of the Klamath Mammoth. You see, sometimes even my smart friends forget that I'm allowed to leave the desert now and then, that I'm allowed to know things about many places, many different times. But he was unfazed, as always. And says, huckleberry season. That's when you keep your eyes open. Now he wrote down another name, Gifford Pinchot National Forest. I know that one, too. It's way up in Washington State. People of the Moon, he says. And then our waiter was back with the oysters and to take our dinner order. I looked at the note papers later, and there was a third one I had not noticed at the time or had not seen. My old friend had written the name Ella Raines in a clear script. Below that, the words logging engineer / father. It was all about the Redwoods. The dense, misty forest of the Coast Mountain Range. And western red cedar, too. Trees of mystery. It took a while to figure out, and I still don't know the half of it, but eventually, it became apparent, more or less, that Region 7 wasn't quite gone, because the people in Region 7 had learned something, and they learned it almost too late. It was something the Brothers Grimm learned when they began collecting the collective memory of the Black Forest. Once the people who know the stories are gone, once they die off without cessation, not only the stories, but the spiritual entities dependent upon those stories vanish, along with the very soul of the place. The living memory and living energy that radiates in the landscape, within the mountains and meadows, within the ancient churches and sacred groves. Even the once-tended gravesites of beloved ancestors, heroes of old, become not just forgotten, but despised. Subsisting off a small private endowment that maintains an equally small staff and private press, Region 7 has been quietly given the crucial task of preserving and disseminating the specific bioregional folklore, legend, ritual, history, both written and ancestral, from oldest times, from the gift of fire, of language, of bronze. Not one region for the whole world, of course. Various organizations are tasked with their own parts of the world, and some even do it, but North America and the United States in particular, well, that became the territory of Region 7, or whatever it's called now. But now I've got a USGS map unrolled, and it's all marked up around there. Founders Grove, Willow Creek, Six Rivers, Eureka, Painted Rock. Painted Rock with the Hairy Man figure, world famous, Yurok rock art. At least 500 years old, maybe 1,000 years old. And it's not just Hairy Man, it's the whole family, the mother wearing something like a burqa and the child in a strange red helmet. The wild man stories go back ages, the time of giants, of forest gods, of river sprites, mysterious nymphs, little people. The big hairy monster, as John Keel called the various regional beasts with their glowing red eyes and stink of sulfur, have been around as long as we have. They are the dark side of the white goddess, or the playful elves, the mischievous puck. They haunt the marches, the borderlands, the irrigation canals, the logging tracks, the wildland-urban interface. They are legion. But they die when forgotten. Then they too forget what they are. So now I know where I'm going this summer. On a research trip. William Butler Yeats and Walter Evans Wentz collected much evidence regarding the beliefs of the spirits themselves, the entities themselves. Like the shadowy Duke of Fairyland, said to a stunned country priest traveling a darkened road in Ireland, "We are seeking salvation," the fairy king said, "and pray you ask the bishop on our behalf. Can we be saved?" Amboy to Zizek's and across the great Mojave wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio. Heard Friday nights in Joshua Tree and all around the Mojave High Desert on Z107.7 FM, KCDZ. And supported by good listeners like you at Desert Oracle or patreon.com/Desert Oracle. Thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver for the good soundscapes. You can listen to and support his work at the Red, Blue, Black, Silver Bandcamp site. This Saturday, that's February 7, my old buddy Sam Chamis in San Diego and his beloved neighborhood bar, The Whistle Stop, will be doing their annual Mojo Nixon matinee at noon. That's noon Saturday. If you're in town, come on by. See the great documentary, the Mojo Manifesto movie, full of crazed scenes and fiery rock and roll. And this marks 2 years? 2 years since Mojo Nixon, also known as Neil Kirby McMillan Jr. of Chapel Hill, in Danville, up in Virginia, that's where he grew up. 2 years since he passed away after his last wild rock and roll show on the Outlaw Country Cruise in the Caribbean. What a way to go. Very fun movie to see in a crowd and a bar. There's a real rogues gallery in there. There's Todd Snyder, that's Winona Ryder. There's Pat Buchanan, there's Kinky Friedman, and there's beautiful Martha Quinn. What's a nice girl like her doing around a dirty Carolina reprobate like Mojo Nixon? Find out. Once again, Sam has made some Mojo souvenirs for the faithful, a free event, but bring your wallet to get a drink or three. Look up Whistle Stop San Diego for details, or just head on over. Sadly, I won't be there this time, but I did contribute a Mojo is Everywhere rally rag design for the usual Mojo sweat towels Sam likes to make. Thanks for listening, and good night from the voice of the desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGBM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, and streaming at kgbm.org. It's time for some nature readings. First off, from Henry David Thoreau, Thoreau on the Days of the Year, edited by Steve Grant. On February 15, 1859, Thoreau wrote, "Against Bittern Cliff, I feel the first drop strike the right slope of my nose and run down the ravine there. Such is the origin of rivers." And on February 16, 1859, Thoreau wrote, "The hen hawk and the pine are friends. The same thing which keeps the hen hawk in the woods, away from the cities, keeps me here. That bird settles with confidence on a white pine top and not upon your weathercock. That bird will not be poultry of yours, lays no eggs for you, forever hides its nest. The willed, or wild, it is not willful in its wildness. The unsympathizing man regards the wildness of some animals, their strangeness to him, as a sin, as if all their virtue consisted in their tameableness. He has always a charge in his gun ready for their extermination. What we call wildness is a civilization other than our own. The hen hawk shuns the farmer, but it seeks the friendly shelter and support of the pine. It will not consent to walk in the barnyard, but it loves to soar above the clouds. It has its own way and is beautiful when we would fain subject it to our will. So any surpassing work of art is strange and wild to the mass of men, as is genius itself. And, as we often do, from Nature, A Day at a Time, by author and naturalist Kathy Katz. For February 15th, she writes, "The tufted titmouse, Parus bicolor, a sociable and energetic little songster, has easily adapted to urban settings, including city parks, roadside fields, and backyards. Titmice hang out with flocks of chickadees, nuthatches, kinglets, and other small migratory songbirds. Staying with their own and other flocks gives the titmouse protection, safety in numbers, and allows more free time for feeding and resting. Birds feed with their heads down, a vulnerable position, but when hundreds of pairs of eyes are scanning nearby bushes and trees for hidden danger, a signal of danger is more likely and can mean life or death. The safety of a flock provides defense against a predator. Flockmates can rally together against a large hawk, where a single bird would lose its chance to live if confronted. When a flock senses danger, a group may respond by tightening up their numbers, a common animal strategy. As the group forms a tight unit, perhaps several birds at the fringes will flutter and create enough chaos to confuse a stalker who initially focused on one single straggler." And then she closes with a quote that goes, "Nothing was more dangerous than being an outcast, losing the safety and nourishment of the group. We still fear that isolation worse than anything. For much of our evolution, being an outsider was fatal. Small wonder loneliness frightens us as it does." And that was from Diane Ackerman in A Slender Thread. So, in today's episode of Desert Oracle Radio, Edward Abbey was highlighted. And normally at this part of the show, I will put in an interview from somebody local. However, I don't have that for you today. But I did find some audio of Edward Abbey giving a speech to the University of Utah in 1988. And I'm going to share some parts of his speech that I think are still relevant today, even though he might have been talking about a different area of the country. But if you're paying attention to what's going on in our state right now, as well as the country, I think, you're going to see what I mean. So thank you to Edward Abbey. And here we go.
"Having lived in Moab, Grand County, Utah, Arizona, for most of the last 33 years, over half my life, I have learned that these places are largely inhabited by some of the finest, most generous, nicest human beings on earth. And I include miners and cowboys and returned missionaries in that category. But why do such nice people have such god-awful politicians? The answer may lie, I think, in the fact that the people of Arizona and Utah are too nice. We are too polite. We tolerate too much. All the public opinion polls of the last few years make clear that the great majority of voters in both states, Arizona and Utah, want our wild areas preserved, not developed, want our air and water cleaned up, not further polluted, want industrial and population growth stabilized, not stimulated. The people, the majority, are on our side, not theirs, and yet the politicians continue heavily, stubbornly, blundering ahead, promoting things like cup and cap, Central Utah Project, Central Arizona Project, nuclear power plants in Arizona, scientific boondoggles like the Super Collider, toxic waste dumps, freeways, highways, more industrial growth, more population growth. It's as if the very process of representative government in America has broken down. The politicians do not represent the voters. They seem to represent the commercial interests which finance their election campaigns. Which finance their grotesquely, grossly expensive election campaigns. In America, politics has become a game for the rich, for the rich only, or for the cronies and the servants of the rich. That's why our politicians no longer represent majority sentiment. They can't afford to, because they've been paid off under the table by the fat boys from industry and commerce. America's business, said Calvin Coolidge some 60 years ago, is business. And alas, that still seems to be the case. America's business is business, and the lunatic ideology of perpetual, never-ending quantitative growth goes on as before. Growth for the sake of growth. Cancer. Unless we, people, can find a way to break through this crust of money power and regain control of our own country and our own lives, we will continue to witness the gradual loss of everything we love, everything we treasure. Meaning true democratic government, that is, government by the people, not merely of the people, a stabilized human population, a reliable, steady state economy, high standards of education for our children. For example, no teacher should have to handle more than 15 kids at a time. I speak from personal experience. My wife was a school teacher. Furthermore, I think that all school children from grade 1 up to grade 12 should spend one day a week in the out-of-doors. I'd rather see our kids wandering around in the hills, along the rivers, out in the desert, up in the mountains, and sitting all day staring at a video screen pushing buttons. for IBM. And the other things that we're in danger of losing, that we are gradually losing, namely beautiful and livable towns and cities, social justice for all minorities, including young white working class males, fair opportunities for all, and to get a little closer to our concerns here this evening, clean air, the kind of 100-mile visibility we used to have in the Southwest, clean drinkable water, mountain streams, rivers that you can drink out of without boiling your tin cup, lots of open space, lots of wildlife habitat, wildness and wilderness and freedom. They go together. How can we have freedom without wilderness? And I mean lots of wilderness, not little patches and islands of wild areas in a sea of urbanism and industrialism, but just the opposite. Bright little islands of civilization in a sea of unspoiled nature. That's the kind of future I envision.
And today there's some events I want to remind you of coming up. You can still view Matthew Barney's film Readout at the Rialto Theater in Bozeman. The showings are Thursday through Sunday at noon and at 2:15, free to the public as a part of Tin Works at Rialto. If you chill easily, dress warmly, this is a film full of mountain winter scenes. It is just stunning and beautiful. Okay, that's my opinion. This opportunity has been extended through March 1st, so I hope you can get to see it. And Museum of the Rockies has some things I want to tell you about. First is the Raptor Meet and Greet, Saturday, February 21st at 10 a.m. in the Hager Auditorium. And this is included with your membership or your admission. So you get to meet the incredible birds of prey that serve as ambassadors from the Montana Raptor Conservation Center. And then there is a lecture coming up, the Rosenberry Donahue Lectures on the American West. The lecture is Beavers, Beacons of Hope, an author talk with Leela Phillip. And that's going to be Thursday, February 26th at 5:30 p.m. in the Hager Auditorium. It's included with your membership, or it's $5 if you're a non-member. And registration is required. So the blurb says, how can we learn from beavers to restore the lands we cherish? In this illustrated presentation, New York Times best-selling author Leela Phillip will discuss the writing of Beaverland, How One Weird Rodent Made America. How she discovered beavers, what went into researching and writing this critically acclaimed book, and the increasingly vital role beavers now play as we confront some of our most critical environmental challenges. And let's not forget that this coming weekend, on Friday, February 20th at 6 p.m. at the Gallatin County Fairgrounds, the Exhibit Building 2, for the little ones, there is the Menagerie of the Imaginary Mini Parade, and that is at 6 p.m. again at the Gallatin County Fairgrounds, Friday, February 20th. And the Menagerie of the Imaginary Lantern Parade is February 21st at Gallatin Regional Park, and that is at 6 p.m. again at the Gallatin Regional Park, and both of those events are free. I hope you can get out there and enjoy them. Our background audio today has been the Lamar River in Yellowstone National Park. Thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver and to Ken Lane for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks to all the volunteers, supporters, and underwriters of KGBM, and thanks to you for listening. Do you have a story or poem you'd like to share with our listeners? Again, I would love to hear it. So please leave a text or voicemail for me at 406-424-6246. This program broadcasts on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio episodes are archived for you on the kgvm.org website. Watch those skies, keep doing good things and sweet dreams. Stay warm and well. Let's close with this from Edward Abbey. The one thing that is truly ugly is the climate of hate and intimidation created by a noisy few, which makes the decent majority reluctant to air in public their views on anything controversial. Where all pretend to be thinking alike, it's likely that no one is thinking at all. Let's have a little Paul Simon to take us out. See you next week.
I got some so-called friends. They'll smile right to my face. Oh, when my back is turned, they like to stick it to me, yes they would. Oh, no, no. Oh, no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. I fly in a JFK. My heart goes boom, boom, boom. I know that customs man, he's gonna take me to that little room. Oh, no, no. Oh, no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on? Whose side are you? I'm knocking around in New York City. Well, they roll you for a nickel and they stick you for the extra dime. Any way you choose, you're bound to lose in New York City. Oh, I just got out in the nick of time. Well, I just got out in the nick of time. Once I was down in Chinatown, I was eating some men's chow fun. I happened to turn around, and when I looked, I seen my chow fun's gone. Oh, no, no. Oh, no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on? Whose side are you on? Well, there's only one thing I need to know. Whose side, whose side, whose side?
When the papa found out, he began to shout and he started the investigation. It's against the law. It was against the law. Oh, what did mama saw? It was against the law. The mama looked down and spit on the ground every time my name gets mentioned. The papa said, oh, if I get that boy, I'm gonna stick him in the house of detention. Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. Mama, take me away, but the press let the story leak. Now when the radical priest come to get me released, we's all on the cover of Newsweek. And I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.